there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 305. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, stroll on over to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a jam-packed show for you this week. We must get started with our first of two guests. Andrew Schneider is the executive director of Fairness West Virginia, the statewide civil rights advocacy organization dedicated to fair treatment and civil rights for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender West Virginians. Prior to this role, he spent 7 years as the executive director of the ACLU of Connecticut, and 6 years before that as the executive director of the ACLU of West Virginia. He is a past recipient of the West Virginia NAACP Freedom Award, and now he is here with us. Andrew, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So where do we start with your background, Andrew? What's your first memory of getting involved with advocacy and thinking, I definitely want to do this?
Well, probably during my teenage years. My stepdad was a lifelong ACLU member, and he became an ACLU member in the days of McCarthy era when, as a young newspaper reporter, he noticed a lot of his left-leaning friends were blacklisted simply for their political association. And the ACLU at the time was the only organization to come to their defense. And so he became an ACLU member at that point and still is. And during the 1980s, when I was growing up, during dinner table conversation, he would try to provoke me and my two brothers into a discussion about current events. And he would use, in some cases, swear words to highlight his passion for his political opinions.
And, nice.
And it may have been that technique that got us to start talking about these issues, and very quickly after that, he introduced me to the ACLU.
Amazing. You first started working, you know, as a professional with the ACLU, it looks like in the mid-90s, and then you spent so many years with them. I can't imagine that many of our listeners not familiar with the ACLU, but if you were to go about describing the virtues of the ACLU to someone who was not in the know, where would you start?
Well, it basically the organization that takes on the government when they violate people's rights, the rights that are guaranteed by the Constitution. And so I look at it as sort of the nation's constitutional watchdog and, if necessary, bulldog, because they will take the government to court when they overstep their bounds of power.
Well, that's a good and noble pursuit that you got involved with.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually during the 1988 presidential campaign that got me really politically motivated and more politically conscious than I had been before. And that was when George Bush, the vice president, George Bush Sr. at the time, was running against an opponent named Michael Dukakis, who was the governor of Massachusetts at the time. And he attacked Dukakis for being a card-carrying member of the ACLU. And for me, I wasn't bothered by the cheap shot, because that happens all the time in political campaigns, especially presidential ones. But I was especially bothered by Dukakis' seeming inability or unwillingness to defend himself.
Yeah.
And I, at the time, had already come to believe the ACLU to be this very patriotic organization that defends the original values embodied in the Constitution. So I couldn't understand how someone couldn't come to the defense of an organization like the ACLU. And so that got me motivated to start looking, as I was looking around at colleges, I thought maybe it would be fun and worthwhile to start an ACLU chapter in a place that might be considered George Bush's backyard. So I found what I thought was the most conservative school that looked interesting. And that was a school called Washington and Lee University.
Of course.
And I went down for my college tour. I saw that like almost one out of six dorm windows was draped with the Confederate flag. It's where Robert E. Lee is buried on campus. It's like a shrine to the Confederacy, even more so when I was there. And so I decided this is the school I need to go to and start an ACLU chapter.
Andrew, I am a college professor and I work with students, you know, for many, many years. I don't know that I've ever heard a student articulate this as their prime reason for selecting their college of choice.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how I got it into my head at that age that this is what I wanted to do and this was an interest in mine for selecting my college, but it was, and it probably was one of the best decisions I ever made.
Nice.
Because I literally received half my education outside the classroom, simply because being surrounded by people who mostly disagreed with my political philosophy, I had to be much quicker on my feet and be ready to defend my views more readily. And then secondly, and I think this is even more important, I also learned how to appreciate where the other side was coming from. And it's a skill that has served me well over the years because it's gotten me to be a better listener, to be less quick to judge, and to, you know, ultimately be able to see where the other side is coming from so that I can find areas of common ground and areas of agreement. And that has been so helpful in my career, both with ACLU and now with Fairness West Virginia.
Well, we have so much to talk about with Fairness West Virginia. Let's start with what brought you to that organization.
Well, I was last year I was helping some friends of mine try to kick off the first LGBT film festival in West Virginia. And I thought it was such an amazing idea, or is an amazing idea, because this film festival basically took on two twin goals. One was to dispel the stereotypes surrounding the LGBT community, but also to dispel the stereotypes surrounding Appalachia and West Virginia. And the films that, a number of them, which depicted LGBT families in Appalachia, did just that. And friends of mine asked me to come to West Virginia and help them raise money for it. And so I took a week vacation from my job as the director of ACLU Connecticut, and I basically helped them to raise the money they needed to launch this film festival, which took place last October in Lewisburg, and it was a huge hit.
Nice.
It got national attention, and we're now doing it again this year. But in the process of raising money for it, I was introduced to members of the Fairness West Virginia Board who were looking for an executive director at the time. And I almost, you know, as soon as I left West Virginia, I realized how much I missed the state. Because unlike any other place that I lived, the friendships that I made here were so strong, they were the friendships that refused to fade. And so I would come back almost every year to visit. And, you know, by year three or four, I was already thinking, you know, it would be great if I found an opportunity here that would be fulfilling and rewarding for me, so that I could actually move back to West Virginia. And ultimately, this when I was doing this film, raising money for this LGBT film festival, that opportunity came about in discussions with various board members of Fairness.
Now, I am not saying, Andrew, that you have to do your job interview over again. You already got the executive director post, but I would imagine that you had to characterize, you know, what your approach would be in taking on the role that you now fill. How would you say that you approach filling the executive director position?
Well, I basically said that I am someone who is an effective fundraiser. I am a good organizer. And I, you know, care passionately about this issue. I've been in the civil rights field my entire professional life. And I also felt that the winds were changing in West Virginia, and I wanted to be part of the efforts to move the state along on a faster pace to achieve full equality for the LGBT community.
Nice. Nice. Now, the word fairness right there in Fairness West Virginia, it's a different word than some other words used in your peer organizations in other states like equality or pride. Talk to me about that word fairness and how it plays out in approaching this work in West Virginia.
Well, fairness is a word that almost everyone understands. It's a word that cuts across political ideology. It cuts across demographics, everyone can identify with the word fairness, and everyone sees that as a noble principle. And so it's not one of those words that is polarizing. It's one that brings people together. And so I think it effectively describes the work of our organization. And we're not out for any special rights. We're not out for doing anything that ought to bother anyone or ought to tread on anyone else's rights. We're doing simply the work to achieve what everyone else has, and that's fairness. And people can understand that, and people can identify that, and that's why I believe our message resonates in West Virginia.
Again, listeners, we're here with Andrew Schneider, the Executive Director of Fairness West Virginia. Andrew, extol for me the virtues of West Virginia. It's less than 5 hours away from where I sit here in Cleveland. I have never been. You obviously have a passion for the state. Do your tourism video. Tell us the virtues of West Virginia.
Well, first of all, you have an open invitation. Anytime you want to come, I will host you. It's a beautiful place. It's full of mountains and it's full of outdoor opportunities for anyone who loves the outdoors. But I feel that one of its best assets are the people. You will never find friendlier people than those in West Virginia. Like, for instance, the day I moved in, and I didn't know anyone in the state, I moved into an apartment in Charleston. And this was back in 2001 when I took my first ACLU job here. And literally the entire hall of my apartment complex showed up to help me unpack. Now, if I had simply come straight from New York City, where I was born, that might have alarmed me.
Right.
But because I had gone to school in the South at Washington Lee, I was already aware that this was customary of the South, and this is how people befriend themselves to others. And so I embraced it for what it was.
All right.
And, ever since then, people have been just incredibly friendly. People say hello to you on the street, and people hug each other. I mean, it's a very warm, friendly, hospitable place, and I've found no place like it. So I recommend it to anyone.
All right. Well, I'm on my way. Get that guest bed ready. What are the big issues on the table right now in West Virginia on which Fairness West Virginia can make a difference?
Well, we are making a difference on the issue of non-discrimination laws. We understand, well, first of all, our ultimate prize is to get a non-discrimination law on the state level through the legislature that would protect the LGBT community from discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations. And it's especially important now that we have marriage equality here because it makes our community that much more visible. You now can, wear a ring on your finger to reflect the fact that you're married. You have you're likely to put the picture of your spouse on your desk just like any heterosexual. You can bring your partner to the company picnic because that's what other heterosexuals do who are married. And you can talk about what your family did by the water cooler, and that should be all perfectly natural now that we have marriage here, but it makes our community that much more visible so that if you do have a homophobic employer, it is, there's much more risk of you being fired for who you are, for who you love. And so that puts that much more pressure on trying to get these non-discrimination laws passed because people do suffer as a result of our greater visibility. And we know that we don't have the wherewithal, the political motivation to do it on the state level yet. So we're trying to create that. And to do so, we are asking towns and cities to pass LGBT non-discrimination ordinances so that we can educate the people in all corners of the state and get these laws to protect our community in the interim until we can finally get the statewide law. But we're also creating the base of support that we're going to ultimately need to get it passed in the legislature.
Yeah.
And so far we've gotten five communities to pass such ordinances, including the smallest town in America, which is in West Virginia, which has a LGBT non-discrimination ordinance, and that's Thurmond. And our largest city, Charleston, also has one. And then Harpers Ferry, Morgantown, and Huntington also have one. And we have four campaigns that have just been kicked off that are pushing to have a non-discrimination ordinance of their own.
You got the town of five people. You got the biggest town, the biggest city there. You just got to fill in the middle now.
That's exactly right.
All right. I love it. I love it. Well, look, we have had just the unbelievable privilege of speaking with so many of your colleagues at other statewide LGBT organizations. And I will pose to you the same question that they have answered before you. What is specific about doing this advocacy work in the state of West Virginia that makes it unique from maybe doing this work in other states? And I know you have worked in other states. What's different about doing this work there in West Virginia?
Well, I think that there is a general propensity to accept and embrace one's neighbor here in West Virginia because it's such a friendly, warm state. And so I think what makes the work unique is that there's the sort of profile of the type of people that we need to accomplish our work. It's already there. We just need to educate and inform them. And so that makes our work that much easier. That said, you know, it's a very deeply religious state.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very rural state, so that's the challenge. But that part of it reflects the fact that, you know, those who are in the countryside, those who are in the small towns, you know, may have less opportunity, you know, meeting a gay person. And the fact that we can reach out to them, the fact that's what we're doing, will help to create that understanding and familiarity that will ultimately breed acceptance and welcoming and inclusion.
Well, in your ACLU work, as you mentioned, you focused a huge chunk of your energy on setting up activity energy on campuses. Talk to our listening audience about the importance of youth involvement and how we can get these voices to the table.
Yeah, it's extremely important because that's the next generation who will sort of carry the baton for us. And not to mention the fact that you look at any poll and it's the younger generation that gets what we're doing, much more so than the older generation.
Right.
You know, you see polls on marriage equality, and it's a lopsided vote in favor of marriage equality among those younger than 40. But those older than 40, it's a little bit of a different story. So we need to cultivate those young people who are already predisposed to our message and predisposed to our principles. And so, you know, we've reached out to all the LGBT groups on campus. We include them in our lobby day efforts. We include them in our annual conference this year, which we happen to be having at WVU, so that we can make it more welcoming and open and available and accessible to students. I have always believed that is an extreme priority of any civil rights education campaign.
What can we do, Andrew, to support you? All of our listeners, whether they live in West Virginia, whether they don't, how can we support the efforts of Fairness West Virginia?
Well, for those who live here, you know, absolutely help us to get their communities to pass these LGBT non-discrimination ordinances. And join us on our lobby day every year. Our next one is taking place on February 9th at the state capitol. For those who live outside of West Virginia, you know, come and join us in these campaigns. Help us, you know, go to our website, learn more about what we're doing, and support us. And we always need financial support as well. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention the website.
You, of course, are going to mention the website, and then I'm going to mention it again later, but you go first.
Well, it is fairnesswv.org.
Nice.
And on top of that, I am also looking to hire some staff. So I'm looking to hire a special projects assistant and a field organizer. And if you go onto the website, you can see those job descriptions on the homepage. And I encourage any of your listeners who are looking to get involved in the civil rights field, especially the LGBT civil rights field, to apply.
I want to apply. I want in.
Well, please do so.
All right.
I need to hire.
Okay. Well, one of the challenges that, many of your colleagues have articulated is doing this work in the context of having great racial representation in this very work, on your board, on your staff, in the communities that you're working in. Talk to me about doing that work with regard to race in West Virginia.
Yeah, I think that's very important. We just recently, it's not just race, but it's also sexual orientation diversity.
Yeah.
We just added our first two heterosexual board members, and one is an African-American woman, and the other is a young person, a student, actually the person who helped to introduce and pass the ordinance, the LGBT non-discrimination ordinance in the smallest town in America, in Thurmond, is now on our board, and he's a student at WVU Law School.
Nice. Oh, that's fantastic. We love that involvement.
Yes.
All right. Now, my favorite question. This is where we always conclude with all of your colleagues. My favorite thing to put out there for you. Talk to me about how great your board, your staff, your volunteers are.
Oh, they are amazing. Once I had the pleasure of meeting with them when I was raising money for the LGBT Film Festival, you know, I knew this was the perfect opportunity for me, because not only is it a big passion of mine, but the people that I knew I would be working for were so great and smart and friendly, and just, they're just wonderful to work with. We just had our board retreat a couple of weeks ago, and we got so much done. We all liked each other. It was just a wonderful weekend.
Nice.
And my volunteers, it's the same thing. I love the people that I work with. Everyone is so giving of their time and so passionate about the cause. It makes, you know, getting up for work every day such, you know, such a gift.
I suppose I should have mentioned to you that your board actually is using this interview as part of your performance appraisal. So we should factor that in there. I'm gonna tack on one question for you. You know, you've been in the position for, you're getting on a year. You're a few months shy of a year, 4 or 5 months shy of a year. When September rolls around and you've been in this position as the executive director of Fairness West Virginia for a year, what are you looking to measure your success on your own personal level?
Well, I would like to see, you know, the number, you know, by the end of the calendar year, I'd like to see the number of towns that have passed LGBT non-discrimination ordinances doubled.
Yeah.
From the time that I started. I think in the legislature, we got more than what I expected to accomplish, and so we were really lucky. We not only defeated all of the Indiana-style discrimination legislation, both the Arkansas-style discrimination legislation,
right,
both were defeated. We also passed the first LGBT equality measure in state law in our history. And that bill basically allows transgender people to update the gender markers on their driver's licenses now. And that's huge.
Oh, that's such important work. How do you navigate just kind of the personal aspects of all this? What do you do to recharge? Do you actually take time off? Because some of your colleagues, I worry about some of your colleagues.
I'm a huge believer in vacation.
Nice.
And I take, you know, enough vacation so that I am fully rested, I'm fully recharged, and I, you know, basically have a chance to, you know, see places that I would never, you know, get to see if I didn't put my work aside and basically go off and enjoy the world.
It's good role modeling. It is good role modeling. Listeners, you need to stroll on over to fairnesswv.org. Andrew, on behalf of all of our listeners, you and your board and your staff, you guys are doing such amazing work to, as you say, ensure that LGBT people can be open, honest, and safe in the Mountain State. We look forward to so much more from you all. But on behalf of all of our listeners, thank you guys for all the amazing work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you, Ken, for having me on your show.
We'll be right back. All right, folks, and we are back with our second amazing guest of this jam-packed show. Dario is a performer whose music is going to give you just a jolt of energy that will easily get you through your day. His first single, B, landed at number one on the independent sales chart back in April of 2004. His follow-up single, Lies, in 2005, as well as two full-length albums, Dedicated in 2007 and The Upside of Down in 2011, they were all huge commercial hits, selling over 100,000 copies. In 2013, you must have watched the reality series Dario Undiscovered. We all did. It offered an in-depth look at the making of his fifth album, as well as a glimpse into his personal and professional struggles and triumphs. He's collaborated with leading UK DJ Les Hemstock, and he's been the opening act for Destiny's Child, Casey and JoJo, and Ashanti. His new CD, Revolution, the deluxe edition of last year's Evolution, it's already selling like crazy online, and it won't even be out until May 5th. The first single, Backlash, came out last week, and it broke the top 40, snatching the number 28 slot on the National Independent Digital Radio chart. And now he's here taking some time with us. Dario, welcome to this show, It's So Gay.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
What an exciting time for you, my friend.
It's crazy, right? It's funny because as I hear you talking about my track record, I'm like, oh my God. And it's mind-boggling.
Well, we will start with you as we start with all of our musical friends all throughout the years. Tell our listening audience, Dario, why the medium of music to get your voice out there?
To be honest with you, it's something that I've always loved. I remember, you know, I want to say since I was three, you know, knowing what I wanted to do as an adult. For me, music has always been the universal solvent for every single problem that exists. And I love it. I love the way it makes you feel. And I mean, there's a song out there for everything. I'm sure when you're sad, there's a song for that. When you're happy, when you're angry. And I love the way music feels. And I love the fact that I'm able to call it my job and make a living doing it.
Nice. Where can we get our hands on video of three-year-old Dario singing?
Hopefully nowhere.
Come on.
That's before the training, the hair, the makeup, the lights, the smoke, the mirrors.
That's what we want to see. Talk to us about some of your musical influences.
Oh, my God, there's so many. You know, I want to say when I started my career, I still am a huge fan of Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
He revolutionized, no pun intended, this music industry and the way we see music. I loved a lot of soul music, a lot of R&B, Marvin Gaye, Al Green, and then growing up now, like I'm big fan of like Mariah Carey, Christina Aguilera, Beyonce, you know, there's so many.
Yeah. Was there a pivotal point for you? Was there just like one point where you said, okay, I just have to make a go of this?
I think my goal has always been that. I think that every single album and every single tour and every single magazine cover and every accomplishment that I've made has given me that. The better question is, how many times have I given up? Because that happens almost every month.
Yeah.
It's a very hard business. And to be honest with you, even though I love what I do, it's so hard because when you have a taste of success, you know, you want more of it.
Right.
So, and for me, I can't keep chasing the same thing. You know, I have to be content with what I have and just, you know that I'm lucky to even have any success at all.
Yeah. You know, that's one of those topics, Dario, that we don't talk about nearly enough. We've been doing this show for so many years, and we talk about so many of the highlights, but there are struggles and there are obstacles. How do you motivate yourself through those?
I think for me, and this is the truth, I don't want to say that I motivate myself. I want to say the fans do.
Nice.
There has been numerous times in my career where I'll have a sold-out tour, you know what I'm saying, 68 cities, 7 months. The album's already sold over 200,000 copies, and everything's going fantastic. And then some news hits the media or something bad happens, and the thing about this business is we depend on media a lot to push us out there. And you feel like it's over, like everything is over, and you want to give up, and things aren't going right. And then you decide one day, okay, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. This is my last record. I retire.
Right.
And then 2 days later, you start getting social media, fan mail, a bunch of stuff from fans saying how much you've changed their lives. Like, you know, if it wasn't for that song, you know, I would have killed myself. Or if it wasn't for your music, you know, I wouldn't be here now. Or those kinds of things. And it's kind of like, damn, because of you, now I can't give up. You know what I'm saying?
But I would think that with that comes a little bit of pressure as well. I mean, what a high that is. But then there's also that responsibility.
Absolutely. The pressure is so ridiculous. A lot of people say, oh, your life is so great and it's so fun and it's so glamorous because you're in magazines and you're on TV and you're on the radio. And yes, it's a lot of fun and I do love what I do, but it comes with a huge amount of responsibility.
Yeah.
Because whether we like it or not, as a public figure, you become a role model for, you know, all of these people out there that are listening to you and watching you and seeing what you do. So there's a lot of pressure being in my shoes.
Oh my gosh, I bet. Well, let's talk about some highlights. What's one of those times that you walked off stage and said, holy cow, look what just happened?
Actually, that was recent. That was in the Evolution Tour. I literally, my last record, Evolution, which was last year, I did a 68-city, 7-month tour. The first 2 months, it was very rocky because I am an independent recording artist. And a lot of people look at me and they say, well, you've sold nearly a million albums. You know, you should be set. And I'm like, no, it's not like that. Every single album is different. Music changes, the audience changes, blah, blah, blah. So when we started the tour, it was very rocky. We had like 82% capacity at the venue. And I was scared. I was like, we're not going to make it. And then after the second month, word of mouth started spreading. You know, have you seen Dario on the Evolution Tour, blah, blah, blah. And it started spreading like wildfire. The last 4 months of the tour were completely sold out. The first city that I hit that was a sold-out city in the middle of the tour was Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Okay.
I got there, and it was an 11,000-seat venue, and it was completely sold out.
Wow.
And I remember getting there and being backstage and walking in and hearing the people. And I said, is it full? And they were like, yeah. So I looked out, and I started crying. And I said, oh, my God, who's here, Madonna? And they were like, no, you are. So for me, that's the moment that I was like, okay, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. This is right.
Wow. Can we take a step back? What would you say it is that you are trying to do? What effects are you hoping to have?
To be honest with you, I just want to make a change.
Yeah.
I want to inspire others, and I want to be able to. And I don't want it to sound like one of those cliche pageant, you know, answers. I'm actually being honest. In the very beginning of my career, I'm not lying, I'm being honest here. I wanted to be worshipped. I wanted to be loved. I wanted to be famous. I wanted what I'm doing right now for all of the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And then again, I was a teenager. But as you get older, you realize that those things change. You realize the impact you have on people. And you realize that you have a platform where you have the ability to do things that most people can't do. And once you're in that realization, it's kind of like, damn, I can actually make a change with my name, you know what I'm saying, with my presence. So it changes. And now it's not about, I mean, it hasn't been about that in a long time. For me, it's not about fame. For me, it's about what I can do with my name and with my place in this industry right now.
Yeah.
For everybody else. It's about giving back, if that makes any sense.
It makes a ton of sense. It makes a ton of sense. Now, you made this decision. You know what? I'll let some cameras film me, and I'll put it out there for the world to see. Yes, I feel like that just summed it up, my friend. Dario Undiscovered. What were you thinking there?
Well, here's the thing. Literally, a lot of the industry came at me for about 3 or 4 years, and they kept saying to me, because it's not a secret, you know what I'm saying, people know about this, about 7 years ago, I went through a really bad embezzlement. I was at the top of my career, I had just finished touring with Beyonce, everything was going fantastic, you know what I'm saying, I had a song on the radio, I was on magazine covers, you know, all this stuff was happening, and then all of a sudden, my agent and my manager embezzled 93% of everything that I made.
Wow.
Touring, merchandising, ticket sales, endorsement deals, I lost everything. I was homeless for about 8 months, and I was living in homeless shelters, friends' couches, you name it. Little by little, I started getting my life back together. I had to get a regular job at first, and it was weird because at the time, the way media works is they put you on a magazine cover 2 months before the magazine comes out. So all these covers start coming out, and I'm working at, like, a convenience store. So people were like, wait a minute, aren't you on the cover in such and such magazine? So that was really hard to explain. So after that whole experience, and when I got my life back together and my career back together, a bunch of production companies were saying, we want to do a reality show because you haven't told your story yet. And I didn't want to do it because most reality shows are scripted. But in 2013, a production company came and said, we're willing to do it your way because we think your life is interesting. Biggest mistake of my life. Great, great mistake. The biggest. Because I didn't realize how in-depth they were going to go into my life. And we literally started shooting the reality show in February, I want to say, of 2013. And we finished taping in April. and it was six cameras, and it was hard. And I don't want to say it's a mistake. It's just, it was hard. Because when the show is called Dario Undiscovered, that means 95% of the show is you.
Right.
So, but to be honest with you, I was scared. I didn't think that we were going to have any viewers. I didn't know what was going to happen. And then to all of a sudden have 2.3 million viewers tune in to watch this, I was like, oh my God, people must like me.
Yeah. Okay, but you got to tell us, what's the one moment that you're like, oh man, I wish that wasn't on film?
You know what? I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't mind. Then again, I was the executive producer, so a lot of stuff stayed on the cutting room floor.
I would like to rephrase my question. Please tell us about one moment that is on the cutting room floor that we should have seen.
Okay, I'll tell you one.
Okay.
Only because you asked me the question, and I hope they're not listening, and I hope it doesn't become a situation.
Okay.
During the the auditions for Dancers for My Tour, there was, and this is so bad, and it's probably not that bad, but to me it is. As a public figure, you have to always watch what you say, watch how you look and how you interact with other people, because you don't want anyone to think that you're disrespectful or rude. Well, there was this one girl, she looked a mess.
Okay.
And we kept asking ourselves, why is she here? She's not really a dancer. This has to be a joke. And I even asked, did production bring her in here to get a reaction out of us? Because she looks crazy.
Right.
And I said something really ugly, and I'm not going to repeat it. And they taped it, and it's because they taped everything at the time. And we rolled our eyes, and it was just so disrespectful. And once I was in the editing bay, a couple weeks later when they were going to edit that episode, I was like, wow, I look like such a so it didn't make the show.
But now I'm sure she's a big hit, and everything's fine. Okay, we'll leave her behind. We'll leave her behind. I'm going to get her on next week's show, and we're going to talk about her side.
Oh, God, please don't.
I love it. I love it. Well, one fun fact that I read about you, 80% of the Evolution tour stops were at Pride events.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
It's funny because when I first started my career, I didn't know where I fit in. And, you know, I was young. I was barely getting into the music business. I had no idea what the hell I was doing. And a friend of mine had actually, who worked at nightclubs, was DJing at a gay bar in Tucson, Arizona, where I'm from.
Yeah.
And she took the song and she played it. It got a huge response. About 2 or 3 days later, I saw her and she said, oh, my God, this is what I did. Here's what happened. I think we have something here. And I said, okay, cool. Run with it. And I gave her the song and that was it. All of a sudden, a couple of weeks later, I get a call from the Pride Association in Tucson, Arizona. They want me to come and perform at their Pride event. My first Pride in my life. Never been to Pride. Had no idea what it was. And a couple weeks into it, because they booked me 2 months before the show, they couldn't get a headliner. My song was on the radio. I had just gotten a magazine cover. It was starting to become a thing. I was building up steam. So they called back and they said, we're going to make you the headliner. And I was the headliner. I'm like, this is my first big show. Like, I don't even know what the hell I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. From that show, something happened at Inner Pride or something where everybody started talking about me. And then all of a sudden, I started doing all these Pride events. And last year, 2013, 80% of the dates were all Pride events, and it was amazing. They made me the headliner for every single Pride, Fort Wayne, Tacoma, Bellingham, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Palm Springs. I mean, you name it. I was the headliner for all of them, and it was crazy.
Wow.
Because the LGBT community is such a wonderful community. If you get their respect, you've got it for life.
They've supported you. Look at that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Every LGBT magazine, I've pretty much been on the cover of all of them. So, I mean, I have 52 covers to my credit, so I owe it to the LGBT community, absolutely.
Awesome, awesome. Now, I'm going to call you out on a Facebook post you recently put on Facebook. Some of the music I listen to might genuinely surprise all of you. Surprise us, Dario.
Oh, God. You know what? It's so funny. That was kind of a joke because we were literally I remember that post, too. We were literally in rehearsals, and we were getting ready to do rehearsals, because right now we're rehearsing for the Revolution Tour, which starts in a couple months. And I had the music on my iPod, and as we're going to the iPod, this real crazy, I can't even remember who it was, heavy metal song comes on, and everybody's like, whose iPod is that? And they're like, it's Dario's. And everyone looked at me like I was crazy, like, you're a pop star. What are you doing listening to this crap? But that's the thing that people don't realize. Yes, I'm in pop music, but I'm a musician. So I respect all music, you know, country, rap, you name it. You know what I'm saying? I listen to it.
I had it in my head that you were jamming out to Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Oh, God. that would have been a really good one to put on online.
I'm just saying. Now, you've done so much community work, charity work, working with a ton of different foundations. How do you pick a cause to work with?
Well, I usually try to find the ones that don't have a lot of attention. For instance, you know, cancer is everywhere. You know, and everyone's doing the, you know, walk for breast cancer, the this, the that. And I feel like sometimes, like I said before, as public figures, we have a responsibility to be able to use our name and our platform to do something good for other people. So I try to find ones that need some light shed on. For instance, the sickle cell anemia one. There's not a lot of people doing that. So I said, well, look, I have a huge fan base, and I've got a platform. Let's do something. So I went there and I did that. BFI, Building Futures Incorporated, actually, we've become really close friends with the director of that foundation. I went to an event that they had invited me to, and it was all these kids that literally, they grow up in really bad homes and really poor neighborhoods, and they don't have the means to be able to do things, you know what I'm saying, to one day believe that they could be on a stage or on a magazine cover or be a police officer, whatever it is. And they help these kids, you know, to make their dreams come true, basically. And I figure, well, what better cause? So I went and I did it, and I love it. I've actually been working with them for about 4 years now, and every single year we do a dance competition because the director was telling us that in dance, because she used to be a dancer, there's a huge amount of discipline that it takes to become a dancer, and that discipline transfers over into the regular life, you know, working or, you know, doing whatever it is they're doing, everyday stuff. And I love that. I love that foundation, and I love working with the kids. And it's good because they are, you know, the next generation. So we might as well build good minds.
Nice, nice. Well, as we said at the top of the interview, a very exciting time for you. Tell everybody what's coming up.
Oh, my goodness. So my new album, Revolution, comes out in 8 days. I'm so excited. This is my first deluxe album in my career, and it's crazy because I never thought I was going to have that opportunity, and here I am. The first single, Backlash, came out last week, and it's actually 21 this week, so I'm super excited.
Look,
so we moved
that
up 7 spots.
Nice.
And the album's not even out yet, and we're already top 40 on the bestsellers of Amazon's list. So it is amazing, the response that we're getting. The tour starts in a couple months. I'm headlining again. It's the Revolution Tour. And I have a music video for Backlash that comes out in a couple weeks, and it's actually very pro-gay, so I'm super excited about it.
Tell us about a pro-gay video, what that means, why you would put that out there.
Well, here's the thing. After the Evolution tour ended, yes, my voice is very high. Yes, I'm a little feminine. Yes, all of these things are, you know, it makes me up. I wear rhinestones and all kinds of crazy stuff on stage, but I'm a performer. That's my job. So I was getting a lot of flack from the media, the blogs, the, you know, a bunch of stuff, calling me, you know, really derogatory terms. So in this music video, the song is called Backlash. It's basically about, you know, bring it on. I've got 9 rounds in me. Bring it on. So what I did was when I wrote the song, it was basically telling people, I really don't care what you say. I'm going to be exactly who I am with or without your approval. And when we started filming the video, we were filming it about how the paparazzi treats me and how the media treats me and blah, blah, blah. But in the middle of the music video, we had just finished doing it, we're in the editing bay, I started seeing all these quotes from back in the day from when I did the Evolution tour, what people were saying to me. And I took a lot of them and I put them in the video. And it's probably going to piss a lot of people off, and I'm okay with that because I'm a recording artist. It's my job to be a little bit shocking.
A little edgy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One of the worst ones was, who is this faggot and why do we care? I'm like, let's put it in the video. So everybody in the room is like, Dario, please don't put that in the video. Like, you are going to get so much crap from the media. And it's going to, I'm like, it doesn't matter. I'm not using it in a derogatory way. That's what they said about me. You know what I'm saying? And I'm so tired of no one talking about the issues. Nobody. So let's talk about it. You said it. Why did you call me that? You know what I'm saying? Kind of a deal. So if people who are artsy and they'll get it. You know what I'm saying? I think the fans will get it and they'll appreciate it.
I would imagine you've already gotten quite a bit of response to it.
Oh God, yeah, absolutely. You know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to get like response in a negative way. I want them to see that I'm doing a positive thing. I'm standing here and I'm saying, let's talk about it. You know what I'm saying? You want to call people names, so let's bring it up. You said it. Why did you say it? type of a deal. And I think that that's what I want to start a conversation, if it makes sense.
I love it. I love when we start conversations. These are good things. Well, listeners, everybody, you need to stroll on over to DarioOnline.com because it's all going down there. He's got his Facebook link there. He's got his Twitter link there. YouTube is there. Everything is there. It's like a one-stop shopping for everyone, Dario.
Thank you so much.
Now, when we have on next week's show, Dario, that dancer that you dissed, is there anything that you would like us to say to her?
If you did that, I will come down to the station and I will strangle you.
She's got my back, so I'm not so worried anymore. And she looks crazier than you do, so I'm not worried. I'm not worried.
My security is bigger than yours.
Listen, my cat can really get into some tiffs, so you don't know. You don't know.
Oh, and I'm allergic to cats, so you'll probably win.
On it. On it. This was easy. Just one like that. 2015 tour dates, they're being announced soon. Where are you excited to head to?
You know what? I'm excited about every city that I've never been to.
Okay.
For instance, just to name one of them, Deming, New Mexico. Never been. I had no idea there was a Deming, but when they called and they said, we want you to be the headliner, I said, okay, let's do it. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I'm super excited. I'm excited to visit places that I've never been before. I don't want to talk ahead of myself, but we're actually in talks right now. I can't really say too much, but we're in talks with Asia. They want me to do a 38-city tour, 2 months in early fall.
Wow.
So I'm really excited because I've never been to Asia, so... You know, this album is definitely opening a lot of doors for me.
So exciting. What's one of those places that you went to and you fell in love and you had never been there before?
Believe it or not, the Midwest. I never thought in a million years that I was going to get booked to do a show in Lexington, Kentucky.
Wow.
I was like, I'm going to show up. I'm Latin. I'm everything that I thought that they weren't. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, they're not going to like me. I'm going to get stoned and... And I showed up, and it was 22,000 people. And, I mean, I was the headliner, so I was like, what is happening? And I remember when we got there, it was raining, and it was an outdoor event. And it was like 11 o'clock in the morning. I didn't go until 8 p.m. And people were like, we're not moving until Dario comes out. I was like, oh, my God. So that was a huge surprise.
So much fun. So much fun. All right. Again, everybody, DarioOnline.com. My friend, you are using your voice the way that we tell everyone to use your voice to make a difference, to do something unique, to get people moving, to get people thinking. It's such a great thing that you're doing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're going to keep on doing it?
Absolutely.
All right.
Stop it anytime soon.
And when you need an extra backup dancer, I know somebody.
Oh, is it you? Just kidding.
It is so not me, but she'll be on next week's show and it'll be fun.
I can't wait to hear it.
Dario, please keep doing what you're doing, my friend.
Thank you so much.
I'm saying what I want, getting over the top. This time I've had enough. I just don't give a fuck. Whoa, whoa, whoa. So bring on the backlash. I'ma throw it back. Don't got no broken bones from all these sticks and stones. You think you got my number, I promise that you don't. Whoa, whoa, whoa. So bring on the backlash, I'ma throw it back. Ooh, I play this game with fire.
If you don't quit, you're gonna get burned.
Ooh, your words don't mean a thing. No.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, not a ton of time left on this week's episode, but a little bit, so let's get to some of the big LGBT news out there. It doesn't get much bigger than what went down in the Supreme Court this week. The hearings were held. People were outside. People heard some audio. There's a lot of transcripts all about marriage equality there at the Supreme Court. I just want to direct our attention. I mean, there are so many stories, and I couldn't begin to even cover a fraction of them. But let's turn our attention to the woman to which all of our attention should be turned, and that is, of course, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Her quotes all throughout the hearings were just the best. So while other people appeared divided, Ruth Bader Ginsburg did not appear very divided. She had some choice quotes. Here are some of them. She said at one point, quote, "Marriage today is not what it was under the common law tradition, under the civil law tradition. Marriage was a relationship of a dominant male to a subordinate female. That ended as a result of this court's decision in 1982 when Louisiana's head and master rule was struck down. Would that be a choice that state should be allowed to have? To cling to marriage the way it once was?" That's Ruth Bader Ginsburg with an amazing quote in the face of the critics saying, and her fellow justices saying, "Oh, you're changing the definition of marriage. You are transforming it," as Justice Roberts said at one point. That's what he was alleging that the proponents of marriage equality were trying to do, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg shot that down. Then John Birch, the lawyer representing the states that want to keep their gay marriage bans, he tried to argue that the sole purpose of marriage, this actually happened, okay? John Birch, the lawyer representing the states that want to keep their marriage bans, he tried to argue that the sole purpose of marriage was to support procreation. He said, quote, "The state doesn't have an interest in love and emotion at all. It's about binding children to their biological moms and dads." Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she shot that down. She said, quote, "Suppose a couple, 70-year-old couple, comes in and they want to get married. You don't have to ask them any questions. You know they are not going to have any children." There you go, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But it goes on. It goes on. That lawyer also tried to assert that gay marriage would be detrimental to the institution of marriage in general. Not so, Ruth Bader Ginsburg responded. She said, quote, "All of the incentives, all of the benefits that marriage affords would still be available. So you're not taking away anything from heterosexual couples. They would have the very same incentive to marry, all the benefits that come with marriage that they do now." Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you gotta love some direct quotes. So if you've not seen the transcripts, you really should go read what was said. That a lawyer stood up there and said, yeah, no, marriage is all about procreation. What are you talking about? How is that something you're even able to assert with a straight face? Marriage equality. Most of the stories are about it, but that's all the time I'm going to spend on marriage equality, because there are other stories out there. The LGBT news sites would have you believe that there aren't, but I swear to you, there's other things going on right now, and I'm going to tell you about a few of them. A conservative North Dakota lawmaker, I know many of you heard about this, a conservative North Dakota lawmaker has come out of the closet after lewd texts he sent on a gay dating site were made public this week. The Randy Red State Republican, Representative Randy Bonig, was outed this week more than a month after the state legislator sent an unsolicited picture of his genitalia and several other messages to 20-year-old Bismarck resident Dustin Smith back in March on the dating app Grindr, or the hookup app Grindr, whatever you want to call it. This state representative is a 12-year veteran of North Dakota State Assembly. He has routinely voted against gay rights legislation, but he charged that the leaked messages were sent to media outlets in retaliation for his vote against Senate Bill 2279, which would have added sexual orientation to the state's anti-discrimination law. For the third time since 2009, the bill was voted down by conservative North Dakota lawmakers, including Representative Randy Bonig. But Smith, the 21-year-old who leaked these messages to this site called The Forum, he claims he simply wanted to reveal Bonig's hypocrisy. Smith said this, quote, "How can you discriminate against the person you're trying to pick up?" A lot of the sites are reporting about Bonig's screen name and some of the things he says on there. I'm not going to report on that because that seems to be really salacious, but I will report on his quotes. Representative Bonig said this, quote, "That's what gay guys do on gay sites, don't they? That's how things happen on Grindr. It's a gay chat site. It's not the first thing you do on that site. That's what we do, exchange pics on the site." But he said, "The 1,000-pound gorilla has been lifted. I have to confront it at some point." There you go. So he is coming out, and some people are being very critical of, oh, we don't like outing, we don't like outing. And I don't like outing either, and I'm being a little hesitant in that, except, and I've said this before on the show, except when you are in those situations where you have someone who's in a position of power who is using their power to discriminate against their LGBT brothers and sisters, and at the same time, they are gay and not acknowledging that at any point. So I'm not for the random outing of people, but it's hard when it's in the face. It's hard for me to rally against outing when we're talking about politicians who are using actively using their power to discriminate against the LGBT community, then we are talking about hypocrisy, and that's really difficult. I would like to see maybe some of the quotes that this North Dakota representative said in some of these hearings. If he has any quotes that are particularly anti-gay, that makes me feel even, you know, less bad about the outing. There's still a part of me that's like, oh gosh, I like when people come out of their own free will and at a time that they're ready and aren't forced into a situation, because everybody has a family. And even in the most liberal places, you still might have family members who are anti-gay. But at the same time, this is a guy who was voting against LGBT protections. He could have made such a difference, and he didn't. And perhaps part of that was him making anti-gay statements. I don't know. I would like to see some quotes. I'd like to see some quotes. Over in Oregon, an Oregon judge has ruled that the owners of a Portland-area bakery who refused to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple should pay the couple $135,000 in damages. That seems like a lot. That's a lot. Administrative law judge Alan McCulloch issued a proposed order last week that could mean sweet cakes by Melissa Bakery owners Aaron and Melissa Klein will have to pay $60,000 in damages to Laurel Bowman Crier and $75,000 in damages to Rachel Bowman Crier for emotional suffering. I wonder why one got more than the other. That's interesting. In 2013, when the two women were planning their nuptials, the Kleins, citing their religious beliefs, refused to bake the cake. The gay couple married in 2014 after a federal judge struck down the state's same-sex marriage ban. The state's Bureau of Labor and Industries contends the bakery owners violated the state's anti-discrimination laws because the shop is not a registered religious institution. Both sides of the civil rights case have 10 days to either file an exception to the order or ask for more time to respond. The order will not be final until Commissioner Brad Avakian issues a final decision on the damages, which could include lowering or raising the amount. His decision is expected by the summer. Fascinating. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. The judge's ruling was less than the $150,000 sought by administrative prosecutors and did not propose awarding damages for alleged harm from media coverage of the case. And finally, let's end on a happy note. Prom night is a memorable rite of passage for many high school students across the country. This experience was especially monumental for two gay West Virginians. Look how much we're focusing on West Virginia for this week's show. Muscle Man High School Senior, that's the name of the high school, Muscle Man, I swear to you. Muscle Man High School Senior Michael Martin and boyfriend Logan Westrope, who attends Hedgeville High School, were among the many couples who partied at Muscle Man Senior Prom on April 25th at the Heritage Hall at Inwood, West Virginia. A four-year starter on his high school soccer team, Martin has been dating Westrope, a tennis player, yay tennis players, for 4 months. They're both 18. Westrope confessed a little trepidation when he and Martin arrived at the prom, telling OutSports' Jim Buzinski, quote, "At first we were both a little hesitant to hold hands, not knowing how the rest of the student body would react, but after a short while, we were always next to each other and danced together the whole night." I love it. Westrope said he and his boyfriend only received compliments as they grooved to tunes by Sam Smith, Wiz Khalifa, and John Legend. He said this quote, "Once we left the prom, I remember Michael saying to me in the car, 'Logan, this is our last prom, and I'm so glad I got to spend it with you. I couldn't have asked for a more perfect night.'" I love this story. So beautiful, so beautiful. It's prom season. Let people go to the prom with whoever they want. Don't have any rules against that. Also, let them wear whatever they want. And if your area is not allowing your high school students to go to the prom with whoever they want or wear whatever they want, and you can send an email and find that out, then you should raise your voice and do something. We're all about using your voice in ways to make a difference. Whether you are running a statewide advocacy organization there in the Mountain State, whether you are singing songs and on your own reality show, or whether you are just decrying injustice wherever you see it, please, please, please use your voice the way you know how to use it to raise up the underrepresented voices of your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there in the world using your voice, while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?